I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is a Good Story is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Oh, yeah, in space.
Where no one can hear you talk about it.
That's right. We're going to talk about Aliens with an S from 1986, directed by James Cameron. Or as he prefers to be called, James Cameron the Great.
In his own mind, always. Well, and I chose it. It's one of my favorite movies. Mm-hmm. I've been meaning for us to talk about it for a long time.
The Mother's Day edition of Good Story.
Because it's so appropriate for mothers. We're a little behind Mother's Day, but I feel all mothers should watch this. And as proof of that, we have with us to comment my two daughters, Hannah Edinburgh.
Hello.
Hooray.
And Rose Davis.
Hooray.
Hi.
And there was much so rejoicing. Happy. That's cool. Thanks for being on this.
Of course. We're so excited.
Cool.
Yep. Mom indoctrinated us early on this one.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, Rose said she didn't know if she even needed to rewatch it after she'd seen it. And I said, yes, I could say almost everybody's line with them. I've seen it so many times. Which is, something's wrong with that, but there you go.
It had been a while since I've seen it, but I do love it. And I owned them.
So, well, okay then.
Yes.
Them, meaning them the first meaning
I have
two?
This little set thing that has Alien, Aliens, and for some reason, The Abyss.
What?
Yeah, I know.
Not even Alien 3?
No.
Or The Terminator.
I'm not sure why, but that's what it has.
Huh. It's the only way we could sell it, man. I can't even apologize to anybody who loves The Abyss because most people can't remember all of it.
Are there people who love The Abyss?
Yeah, there are, actually.
Mm-hmm. Oh, are you one of those people?
No.
Oh, okay. You can stay.
I didn't actually dislike it. It was just a totally different style of movie. Yeah.
I just don't remember almost any of it, so.
Yeah. But I think Aliens is a huge part of why they let him make that movie.
mm-hmm. That and Terminator.
Yeah.
Plus, hadn't he made Terminator 2 by that time?
No, because after that, Vasquez, whatever that actress's name is, she was in Terminator 2 after that. Because they were talking about how he likes to use the same actors over and over.
Oh, I meant The Abyss. But it actually looks like he made The Abyss between Aliens and Terminator 2.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, he did both Terminators, right?
He did the first two, yeah.
He did the first two, okay. Yeah, that's what I meant by both.
Both Terminators.
There are more.
So
yeah.
Be that's more right. specific.
Okay, so. Aliens.
Yeah, so what's Aliens about?
Well, you know, and the thing is it's funny because all of us independently decided to watch Alien also.
Right, we had to, huh?
Well, and when I first saw this, I had never seen the first one. It was a date with the guy who's now my husband. But I'd had mono, and I was so exhausted through the entire movie
that
I was having to force myself to stay awake, but there was this weird fascination in it. Hmm. And so I didn't see Alien all the way through until last week. When I watched it, because I tried to watch it a couple times and I went, I hate this. This is a haunted house. I don't like things jumping out at me. And it's very dark and it's very claustrophobic. And why is she carrying a cat around with her everywhere? There's no reason for this. And so, but I finally watched it last week. So you don't have to have seen Alien to understand what's going on.
Yeah, you really don't.
Yeah, they do give you what you need.
Yeah.
In a very short amount of time. And then they let her rip.
Yeah, but there's basically a planet where there are all these huge eggs and
that are resting in a derelict spaceship that was crashed. So they're not from there either.
Right.
They're just in this spaceship.
Yes. And when you see the first movie, it's like a long haul kind of a situation. This huge spaceship that's hauling stuff around, and all they're doing is talking about, you know, when are we going to get our bonus? And they go down, they get wakened up early so they can go explore this distress signal. Mm-hmm. And
And they I do love down. The computer. In total silence in the ship, and then you hear the computer. I love that. I wish my computer would make that sound.
I know. I'd feel so much more important. Mm-hmm. And speaking of our theme, the ship's name, the computer's name, is Mother.
Oh, right. That's right.
Yeah. I know. Mm-hmm. Let's ask Mother. They have to type in these weird symbols and everything.
Some mothers eat their young.
Certainly that one would. If your mother is a corporation, you want to watch out. They don't care. Which is another theme we'll see going on. But anyway, so they go down to explore. Somebody gets something that shoots out of the egg and gets stuck on his face, so we don't find out about that part till later. It leaves. Later, he explodes from the inside as the embryo of the parasite comes out. And then it's one haunted house jump scene after another as they try to figure out, how do we find it? How do we kill it? And only Ripley and her cat make it out alive.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
Jonesy,
right.
And then Aliens, she has set the shuttle off after the cataclysmic battle and blowing her ship up. And they find her just before she goes out into space where she would never be found. She wakes up. She finds out it's something like 57 years later or something like that.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Many years later. And in the meantime, they've colonized the planet. We never found anything there. She's like, what? Families are there?
Mm-hmm. And of course, she's been put on probation by the company because she crashed their super expensive ship. She's the only one there to tell her side of the story. Everybody thinks she's nuts. What's this creature that has acid for blood and it's this aggressive? What are you? Okay, lady, sure. So.
If only she'd let the android save one and bring it back.
Yeah, oh, if only. Or if only they had, like a black box or mm-hmm. something.
Yeah.
They could record things like that.
And a backup in their shuttle.
Yeah.
It's a terrible system.
We just didn't have the technology.
or they were saving money for those guys' bonuses, so they couldn't put it into a black box.
All the research had gone into chain technology. I don't know if you noticed, there were a lot of chains.
There were a lot of chains, yeah.
Did not notice
a lot of
that.
Clinking chains.
And teletyping computers.
And space travel.
Yeah, yep. Nothing says the future like chains.
And like a lot of moisture.
Yeah, and also extremely bleak surroundings. I was like, wow, this shows you right here in Alien what the company is like. They're not going to make one decent, nice surface. Even where they eat is like industrialized looking and everything. And I'm like, how have these people not gone insane in this time period?
Yeah. Although I have to say, I feel like part of the reason the special effects have aged so well in those movies is because they grunged things up.
Yeah.
One of the biggest problems is when people make things look so perfect. They don't look real.
Yeah.
And there, they could be like, oh, there's some dirt on it. You can't see any of the special effects.
Well, true. And I was thinking,
if we put enough smoke in the scene, it will look really realistic.
Everybody smoked. Maybe that's why. I was just suspecting Cameron was a smoker.
Everybody
did. Like, I want everyone smoking in here so I can.
Well, and certainly they did in Aliens.
Yeah,
but I also thought that's part of that soldier thing.
Yeah,
they'll smoke because of the tension.
Yep.
But also the thing is when was Star Wars compared to this first one, the first Alien one?
Alien was 79 and Star Wars 76, I think.
Yeah.
77.
So Star Wars, I felt like, started off with that kind of, the reason it worked is because everything looked used. You knew Tatooine was some backwater planet because everything had been patched together and it was kind of dirty looking. And so I kind of felt like that set a bit of a style also that Ridley Scott just took and went, I love this. I'm going to go with it. Because then he did Blade Runner after that, which was ultimate wonderful looking.
Right. Plus that time period, I always associate with really gross, kind of grungy looking futures. Because that was Brazil. It was around that time period too, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So
a movie I still don't
the 80s for me are just like really gross industrial futures.
Yeah, it was a great time. That and disco. So take your pick. You got Shiny Mullet. And Donna Summers or Rollerblades, ABBA.
Was this movie Ridley Scott's thing? He didn't write it, did he? Or was this like something that he really, really couldn't wait to do?
Rose.
No, I think this was one of his first movies.
Okay.
That he, like, his first maybe, like, big movie, because he'd done ads before this.
Mm-hmm.
And right. I think he'd done one or two smaller movies. I could be wrong. But and this was, like, a big movie for him. He didn't write it. They just brought him on. He was, like, he wasn't their first choice for director, but I guess he was the first one that agreed.
Yeah.
Well, and Ripley, Sigourney Weaver, also for Alien, was the last person cast. She was cast.
Really? She's perfect.
And they had sets half built. They were still trying to find someone, and she'd mostly done theater. She'd done some stuff, but mostly theater, and they liked what she did so much, they started taking her to the sets and having her try out on all these sets. And it worked out well because she got a nomination for it.
Wow. How about that?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, it looks like his first movie was called The Duelists, and this was the second one.
Oh, yeah.
And then the next one was Blade Runner.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is the first one that I saw because we went, oh, it's got Harrison Ford in it. And then we went and came out going, what was that? That was great, but what was that? You know, that's not the
super Han Solo book is what it was.
Yeah, well, we don't have to go there right now. Yeah, so anyway, the Ripley winds up on the planet with a bunch of Marines trying to save these colonists whose signal has gone out for some mysterious reason. And yeah, and that's all we need to know about that. Because basically one movie is The Haunted House and the other movie is James Cameron taking that and going, I love Ripley, but could we get some shooting in this? Huh? And some Marines? That would be super cool. And man, you get done with that thing and you feel like you've been running the whole way. You're wrung out. It's so good. I love it.
It's the same way with Terminator.
It's
similar in that way.
Yeah.
Like, wears you out.
Mm-hmm. But the thing I love about it, and I liked this already, but when I saw it on TV, and this is back in the days when they would then show big movies on TV a few months later, you know, they had not the director's cut, but they had like a special edition. So they hadn't put back in the scenes where the family is going off to explore because the company said go explore. But they did have Ripley's scene where she's looking at her daughter's picture, her daughter who grew old while she was in stasis, who she'd promised she'd be back for her 11th birthday. Mm-hmm. And I saw that and went, click, whole new layer. And it turns out Sigourney Weaver was like, could we please put that in? Because she was famously anti-gun. And James Cameron talked her into doing this because he kept saying, this is about a family staying together. It's about keeping a family together, which turns out is one of his themes when I was reading up on him.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, okay. And so she was always sorry that scene was lost because that gave her the ultimate motivation.
Yeah.
But you had
I think James Cameron did a really good job with, because I think the problem always is like, if you escape from this, like, horrifying alien from hell and they say, hey, you want to go back? Like, you're never going to say yes.
Yeah.
So I think he did a really good job with giving her not just, like, the one flimsy motivation where it's like, we know she has to go, so, like, it's your job or something. Like,
she
they gave her the family. They gave
dreams.
her own nightmares. They gave her, like, she can't get a job and this could redeem her. It was, like, those multiple motivations where you kind of felt like everything in her life was pushing her to do this.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, because she says, there are families there. How many?
Yeah.
And that's when you see her really, I mean, she cared already, but that's when she really takes a focus that's different.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
The company already screwed her first family.
Yeah.
Everybody on that ship in Alien was, you know, from Mother's own keyboard, expendable. So, you know, they trusted her completely and then it just didn't matter.
Yeah.
And then, so in her mind, they're doing the same thing to these other families.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the other thing was, as I was watching this, I was thinking, this is one of the first situations where you've ever seen a woman carry an action movie like this. In fact, it might be the first situation where it's really carried off. I mean, Linda Hamilton in Terminator, yes. But this one is, I mean, guns, grenades, you know, I'm going in, it's a war situation. But because they give her the motivation of the little girl, and because she doesn't start off as a soldier, for me that redeems it from being one of these things like Kick-Ass or something where you've taken the femininity out of this character because they've been trained from birth to be like this, or all they are is somebody who can fight. She's intelligent, she's adaptable, she's resourceful, and she's like the ultimate pioneer mother. She's still the mother, and that's what she cares about is the family.
Yeah, and she does still have feelings. So that's what Rose and I, and Rose, mm-hmm. you know, especially was saying with something like, oh, strong female character, Katniss. From Hunger Games.
Right.
And yeah, that's like my pet peeve is when people say that someone is a strong female character because they are physically strong, not because yeah. they're emotionally strong or because...
Well, exactly. And you pointed out, mm-hmm. Rose, that so many people take the laziest way to write a strong female character by taking the female qualities away from the character. Yeah. Like, oh, it's a woman, but you wouldn't know it. You could read it like it was a man. Which there are women like that, and that's not a bad thing, but that's a really lazy way to write a strong female character. Katniss doesn't really have feelings. She's not like...
Well, she actually does have feelings. She has too many feelings, and that was the problem with the second and third books, were all of her feelings.
Yep. And they kept coming back.
Yes. I only saw the first movie, and that's what I was thinking of, where she's like, oh, just getting things done like a robot.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, she cares about her sister, but yeah, whatever.
Well, and this time I was watching it thinking about that because, you know, we did that episode a super long time ago, which, Rose, you were also on, about, you know, female protagonists past and now, you know, Jane Eyre mm-hmm. versus Katniss. And what I really noticed that really reinforced the feminine mother orientation to me was it didn't matter what was happening. She was running to, you know, the lieutenant's been knocked out and she's going to go drive the thing down and save him. And she's like, she slams Newt into a chair and puts the thing down and says, stay there. They're watching and they find the people who are encased and she's like, Newt, go, go. Nobody remembers Newt, but she, every single time, Newt is the first thing she thinks of, and that's a mother. The house is burning down, yeah. but I'm going to grab the kids on the way out the door with, you know, that's, and I like that, you mm-hmm. know, it humanizes.
Yeah, and surprisingly, we see a precursor. I mean, they obviously, so, Ridley in the first movie was written as a man and just gender switched without probably any rewriting of any kind. None of the characters in the first movie have much of a background. I mean, that's not what the movie is. The movie is, you know, a dark cat in an alley.
Yeah.
But the...
So you're saying Sigourney Weaver's character was male and they
yeah.
just switched
Ridley
it out?
Was originally written as a man.
I did not know yeah. that. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they switched it. Mm-hmm. And
it explains a lot, doesn't it?
Hmm.
Yeah. And but considering how little backstory they're given, I think it's oddly precursive that she saves the cat. Because in the first movie, yeah. the cat winds up being how she treats Newt in the second movie.
Right.
Yeah, just, well, that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I was like, heaven's sakes, leave the cat.
Oh, yeah. No, the cat would have been dead as soon as...
Hannah? Disagree.
No, I was just like, Hannah? Hannah? Is that you? Because that would have been Hannah. Hannah would have been going, where's the cat? Where, you know?
Yeah.
And also, that was a brilliant device, I have to say, because... What Ridley Scott or whoever wrote it did was give you two things to worry about. You weren't just worried about where's the alien and is she going to get away. She kept putting the freaking carrier down and going off to push a button and all the steam is everywhere. And I'm like, and then she's running and I'm like, wait, where's the carrier? You forgot the cat and it's shut in there. It can't get. And then she'd stop and run back three steps and grab the cat and go on. And I'm like, thank you.
So I know, it was really scene smart. Where she leaves it because the alien is coming and the yeah. alien's walking up to the carrier like, hey, what's going on here?
Yeah. Yeah. Can I do something with this? I bet I can.
So the writer is Dan O'Bannon of the first one.
Dan
Just O'Bannon. So he gets the credit.
Mm-hmm.
Good for him.
Dan O'Bannon.
James Cameron wrote the second one.
I thought I saw that. And that's the other thing. I was really glad I watched the first one. We were talking about this just a little, but now we can, before we started recording, we can go into it more. But I loved, having seen that first one, seeing how many connections James Cameron made to make it one story, essentially. I mean, everything from just the look of the movie and, of course, Ripley and the company, which just escalates. So you don't know, can you trust the android? Can you not? Oh, there's Burke. We all know him. He's on whatever that TV show was about that time. We love him.
Mad About You.
Thank you, Mad About You, which I watched religiously, even though I couldn't remember the name. And so, of course, we want to love him. He's just the nice guy who doesn't understand things. No. But the things like the cornbread, Rose was pointing that out, is they talk about cornbread in the first one while they're eating, but they're actually eating cornbread in the second one.
Yep. And or the pan of the ship, both ships, before everybody wakes up and there's the little motion machine going. In both of them. And that's the kind of stuff that they took out of the second one when they were pressed for time for the theatrical release. And so not only, you know, you miss some of that stuff, but also just the atmospheric feeling was kind of taken out of it. So it was really, the theatrical release is like a really fast pace with no down scenes.
It's super intense.
So, yeah, and it was a little bit too much, or maybe it was just because I watched them back to back. But, yeah.
Yeah, one night with both those would be tough.
I must have the director's cut because there was a scene in this one that I didn't remember from before, and I think it was mentioned. It was where Newt and her family are driving around in this thing, and they come across the ship. I don't remember. I didn't remember that scene.
That's one I wish they'd have left out because it takes out this element of surprise and discovery that you have when you're watching.
Yeah,
otherwise.
I kind of liked it. It's kind of like the modern way, just over explaining everything. You know, like flashbacks for everyone, backstories for everyone, and I had never seen it without that, but I kind of liked it without that being there.
I think the other problem is when you show Newt's family going to the abandoned craft to explore it, all I can think is, why are you bringing your kids along?
Right?
Like, at best, they're just going to sit alone in a car in an inhospitable environment while you work.
Sitter canceled, man. What are you going to do?
They could watch Mad About You while they're waiting. But yeah, why have them there?
Yeah, they're not these irresponsible, let the TV sit your kids' parents, okay? These kids are getting hands-on experience. Colleges love this.
But I would say, speaking of the and then I'd like to go back and hear more things about how the two movies are connected, but thinking about showing those scenes, it did remind me of the things James Cameron did that I loved. You know, that thing we always talk about, Scott, is Chekhov always said, don't show somebody a gun if it's not going to go off at the end. Oh my gosh, there was not one thing that got mentioned or shown or casually tossed aside that was not picked up and used at the end. And so when they're talking, the mother scolding Newt about, you stay out of those air shafts, well, all the kids do it, I'm the best one. Yeah, that's why she's guiding them through the air shafts later and how she could survive. She was the best one. She was the only one who could do it and stay ahead of
them. Don't shoot your guns in here was important later.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a really good, tight script.
Yeah, it really is.
So more things were there other things that people noticed that connected the two movies, or were those the main things and that was it?
Well, the ends are certainly similar, but yeah, go ahead.
Well, I just think he did such a good job. I think it's so easy to underestimate how hard it is to do a sequel like that. A sequel that ties not only visually and the fact that the alien is the same in both, but thematically builds on the first one without just copying it. And it's so difficult to do something like that. And he did it so well that you almost don't even notice what it's doing.
It's like The Empire Strikes Back, which is the only other example I can think of that has.
But he also had the challenge of not being involved with the first one at all.
Oh, yeah. He hadn't planned any of it. He just had to go back and do it all again. Well, and then, is it Jerry Goldberg did the music for the first one? And James Hornberger, is that his name?
James Horner.
Sorry, that's from 30 Rock. But picked it up, and he was using all that music, but there were all these little things in there, like in the quiet moments, there'd just be the tiniest rat-a-tat-tat of military drums, just once, somewhere. It's a different...
The music in this, the music in Aliens reminded me of Star Trek. Same time period of Wrath of Khan.
Did he do that music too?
I'm not sure who did the music on either one. Is it Goldsmith?
I thought it was, okay, Goldsmith or, yeah.
It could be, but it sounded very similar to me.
Yeah, but, and he was using, Horner was using a lot of the main music anyway because he had to carry it thematically on.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like a Star Wars situation where John Williams owns that. Doesn't matter who does something to it, you know.
Yeah, James Horner did the music for Wrath of Khan.
Okay, well, there you go.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, am I mistaken, or was the first actor slated to wear the alien suit in the first one Jean-Claude Van Damme?
I don't know.
I believe that's true, and eventually he pulled out because it was a full-body suit and nobody would see him. It's like, this is stupid.
Yeah, and well said.
Yeah, but I think that's pretty important.
That would be hilarious. Yeah, and the alien, Ridley Scott does a really good job. Not only is the design of the alien great, but Ridley Scott does a really good job of like showing just enough. It's that Jaws problem that if you show a guy in a suit, it's going to look ridiculous, but he shows just enough that it's super creepy.
Yeah. Right, exactly. And H.R. Giger, right? H.R. Giger is the designer of Alien.
Yeah,
I don't know how much. I don't know how much art he did, but it seemed like a lot because it all seemed to really fit together.
He definitely designed the aliens themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But for the second movie, I think didn't they say Stan Winston, that real famous guy, did all the special effects for the second movie? Mm. I thought. So they were putting real money into it at that point.
Yeah, in Aliens, I mean, there was more of that, you know, aliens being in the scene and you didn't even realize it until they moved.
Yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yes.
That was really well done.
They just start, when they're down there near the reactor core where all those people are cocooned and they just start slithering around and there's just chaos. And, that's one of my favorite bits, although it's so terrible. Mm. Half my favorite characters get killed right then, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But they also, the thing I also liked, and we mentioned this, is, you know, the first one doesn't have a lot of character development because that isn't what it's about. But the second one, even though what it's about is running around and shooting things and, you know, kicking ass with aliens, there's enough character development going on that even in those action scenes, when they're collecting all the stuff because it would cause a nuclear reaction, you see Vasquez pulling two of them out and giving one to her buddy Frost right there. That tells you about her. That tells you about him. That tells you about what they're like together. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you've seen that before, but they used everything to show how all that stuff works. That's when you see the lieutenant, who we already know is weak, and he can't step up to it. He's freezing, mm-hmm. you know? And Ripley's the only one who's going to do anything because Burke's sitting there going, well, you're the experts. I have no idea. And she's like, get in there and save them. You know?
Yeah, and it builds the group of soldiers, the unit, as a family, which is, you know, the theme. So it's just another version of a family.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and it also makes the fact that everybody in this movie who deserves redemption gets redemption, and everybody even has a chance for redemption. If Burke had done the right thing at the end of the movie, he wouldn't have gotten eaten, and maybe he could have said, I was wrong, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There were all those chances. But the lieutenant's redeemed. When he goes back for Vasquez, he's not going to do this again. He's not going to make the same mistake. He's going to be decisive, and he's got the grenade, you know?
Exactly.
He's self-sacrificial. And that's the other thing I love about this movie. It is so redemptive. And yeah, it's in a hardcore Marines kind of way, but everybody's having to make that choice. How far am I going to go for the person I love? Or even if I don't love them, how far am I going to go to save another human being? Because another human being is worth it, especially when you're facing aliens.
Well, yeah, because even... or just how far am I going to go to do the job that I thought I could do, but I really can't, Bill Paxton.
Yeah.
And in the end, he did... He was up for it, but for a long time, he was not. Game over, man. Game over.
That's a great point. That's, yeah. Maybe you haven't been keeping score, but we just got our asses kicked.
Yeah. And then Ripley shuts him up.
Yeah.
He's not listening to anybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah exactly.
Well, because he's... Yeah.
And yeah, because in a big way, she's not just the mother character to Newt. I mean, she's sort of like the ship mom.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
when the lieutenant freezes, she's the one who goes and gets them. And yeah, all of that.
Well, she's outside the chain of authority, so she can step up and go, I'm tired of your bullshit.
Mm.
Let's just do this. She doesn't have to worry about who's in charge and this and that. She's keeping track of it. Because she's the one who goes, well, I believe Lieutenant, you know, whoever, potential Hicks. Boyfriend, Hicks. How could I forget Hicks? I spent all my time watching him. I believe Corporal Hicks has authority here. Yeah.
Is Hicks the new Carl Urban?
Well, he could never replace Carl.
No.
But for this movie.
All right. We'll have to rank then.
Yeah, well, I have to say, because the thing I did love, and, of course, it's only in a movie like this could people exchanging first names be like a first kiss or now we are engaged.
You know? It really was. And what a horrible name.
Dwayne, wasn't it?
It was. It was Dwayne.
Yeah.
Well, but in the thing when he's like, you know, she's like, show me everything. I can handle myself. And he says, yeah, I noticed. Because every time she does something that's not characteristic of a shrinking Violet, he kind of looks at her the whole way through. He's surprised by it and he's observant.
Yeah.
That's why they're a family unit. You know, he's going to take charge as the father figure, essentially.
And also as the father figure, when they're fleeing the final time to get to the ship, and Newt falls down the air shaft or whatever it is, and Ripley can't grab her. She's calling after her. He immediately never says, like, that's it. She's gone. We just have to go.
Yeah.
It's, oh, let's go around here and we can get her.
Yeah.
He's not yelling after her, but he is taking care of her still.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, he's like, we can't stay here, but we're not leaving her. And he's the one who says, you know, she's like, don't let Bishop leave. And he's like, we're not going nowhere. We're going to be here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even when he can't go with her and she's got to do it, he's handling things as best he can right there.
Yeah.
He's got her back, which is what a mother and a father do.
Yep.
Yeah, and there's a thread that connects the two is Bishop and
Ash.
Frodo. Ash.
Oh. Ian Holm, I've
no,
never seen him.
Bilbo.
Yeah, sorry. Bilbo. I've never seen him being anything but old Bilbo.
I know.
And he was so suavely menacing just by having a cold look on his face and the way he deliver a few lines in Alien.
Scary.
Yeah, which is what set it up perfectly for Bishop, who was so fascinated by the elegant design or whatever of the alien embryo.
Yeah, and they're sort of opposites that way, right? Ian Holm's face, if he used it right, it could be really friendly and whatever. I mean, Bishop's got a weird-looking face.
Like, yeah.
Can you see that man at a grocery store and you're going to think that man looks creepy?
Yeah.
But he's not, actually, and he does actually care.
Yeah.
And he does want to be a good android.
Yeah,
Whereas Ian Holm does not.
Mm.
Yeah, I know. He would be the best friend who lives next door.
Yeah.
To the family. Maybe the manservant something, helping out around the house. The uncle.
Uncle Bishop.
Yeah. Well, I also, just because I was thinking about talking about it on this podcast, I was thinking about the fact that although it's just a tangential issue, they kind of flirt with moral relativism. Burke really wants to bring that species back because he wants them for the weapons division and he will make a freaking fortune and we're set for life. Doesn't matter what happens to anyone else. But in order to do that, He's constantly shifting the borders of what's good and bad, what's right and wrong. And he's like, this is an important species. You can't just destroy them. And I'm like, watch me. Yeah.
Yeah.
We will nuke them, you know?
Yeah.
And he starts off doing that by going, here's how you need to present yourself to the business guys. Here's how this could have gone better. Here's how this is. The whole time he's continually softening everything and looking around those soft edges for where's the advantage. How can he get what he needs, whether it's Ripley coming with him or, you know, bringing the aliens back somehow.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And in the beginning, it really feels like he's on her side.
Oh, yeah. It was well done.
Yeah. And then the alien. So this is the first movie the alien queen is in.
Yeah. Yes. That was well done. She was
terrifying. Yeah. Yes.
And smart.
Who is another mother. So we have the alien queen and Ripley as the mother of Newt, the mother figure of Newt. And the alien queen, you know, for all we've seen of aliens, all they do is kill people. They don't seem to have a reason for doing it. I mean, they do the face hugger. It's to make new aliens. But the chest bursters, especially in the first movie, it was killing people for no reason other than they were there. Mm-hmm. So they never seem particularly intelligent. But the alien queen is intelligent. Intelligent enough to say, you're killing my eggs. Like, you're a threat. If I act against you, you'll kill more of my eggs. Which is how Ripley manages to get away the first time.
Intelligent enough to say, an elevator.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's some buttons. I'm going up.
I always wanted to see the elevator music scene of that.
I bet SNL or somebody.
But that's funny. Yeah, it would be it's scarier to think of them as intelligent. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, that scene has the kind of infuriating countdown the whole time.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
yes. Mm-hmm. And things are rocking. And yeah, but that is the excellent point. And then the whole thing about – I just love that. And the other thing about the intelligence and the fact that it's the two of them against each other, because when Bill Paxton's character, Hudson, is postulating about the, you know, ant hive or whatever he's calling it, but he says, yeah, there's one female who runs the whole show. Well – that's who each of them are.
Mm-hmm.
They each are yeah, and this is super obvious. Everybody knows this, but you know, they're each the one female who's running the show. And when that one egg opens up near Ripley and she's backing out and she just cocks her head and gets this look like, you bitch. Sorry, you're gonna have to put an explicit thing on this. But it's like, it took me a couple viewings to go, oh wait, that was on purpose. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you're not getting away. Oh, yes, I am.
Yeah, they do that when the eggs don't just do that all the time. They do that when there's a person there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because we saw that in the first movie, too, didn't we?
Yeah, yeah.
But they were in there with all those eggs.
Yeah, exactly.
They weren't all opening up.
No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was just the one near
the person. So you got the feeling it was intentional. Whether it was or not, you definitely got the feeling. That's when she went, nope, we're not doing this. I'll run like crazy.
Did you all have the impression that the ship that was crashed on there that they found the aliens on originally, that was not an alien ship either, was it?
No.
It was whoever was flying that ship was in turn infested by them.
And yeah, because they said his alien had the broken sternum.
Right, right.
They said it's like he exploded.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And the pilot was, they were sort of like elephant looking.
Hmm.
Things, and they were really big.
Kind of neat looking. Mm-hmm.
Really big.
They were probably like 8 feet tall at least.
Yeah.
Which then, of course, is revisited in Prometheus.
Boo.
Yeah, that was really, it was really upsetting because it was like, oh, you thought that elephantine little alien, did you think that was cool and you always wanted to know what happened there? It's a helmet. Oh, they're just dumb aliens.
Yeah.
So that movie was terrible. But
yes.
And that's Ridley Scott too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's making more?
I think he's making a second one, at least.
Mm-hmm. He has claimed to be making, like, four more of those.
That's what I heard. It was a handful.
Avatar style.
Like, oh, I have this major plan. Of them.
Just like all those alien eggs, he just keeps popping those movies out, you know?
Yeah, the franchise no one wanted more of.
Yeah. Right? We were happy. We were done. It was too much. So,
what a waste of Idris Elba and Michael Fassbender.
Gosh, really? Well, the other thing that I thought of this time that I hadn't thought of before was, and this is super Catholic, so let's put our Catholic hats on. You know, if Ripley hadn't had her horrible loss and her humiliating job of doing a loader because that's all she could get, she would not have been prepared for the end of the movie and able to win. Mm-hmm. She had to go through that in order to both learn the skills and maybe have the discipline.
Exactly.
And that's a real Catholic thing. Go ahead.
Yeah, and it's her willingness to use the loader that gets her the respect of the Marines in the first place.
That's true, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Because she's not just
being right there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. Nice thought.
Yeah, because that's all of us. We have to kind of swallow the times we've done it wrong, or even when it's not our fault. And we're humiliated. And, you know, the saints especially will talk about, you know, humiliation's good for you and all this. And we're just like, no, it happens. But I should not embrace it the way you guys do. But see, if she hadn't, as you guys were saying, said, OK, I'll use the loader, even though it's my only skill. I have to have a job.
Yeah.
Now I'll do it to help you guys out because I don't want to be, you know, the only person not doing anything. And then at the end, she said.
Exactly.
Yeah. Cool. Very nice thought.
That's the coolest piece of industrial equipment I've ever seen. Ever.
I know.
I like it. Yeah, and you know, James Cameron's taken that and run with it, hasn't he? Kind of that concept where you know, in Avatar especially.
Yeah.
And even in the you know, a step even farther by putting someone in a machine and projecting their mind into something else to run.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like it. Yeah. It's cool.
Yeah, that's well, and it's kind of interesting to watch a director over movies like that and see their themes, which since I hadn't seen Avatar, I didn't know that. But I did know that. I knew the basic thing about the movie. That's crazy. But the thing is, when I was reading about Alien and Aliens and they were talking about wherever I was reading this, said he loves families. He loves to save families that he's created in his movies. Mm-hmm. The Terminator movies, the Alien movies, and Avatar, doesn't he make – there's a family on the planet essentially that he becomes a part of or something.
Yeah. And True Lies. True Lies. Another Davis family favorite.
That is a Davis family favorite.
Yeah, and actually in The Abyss, Ed Harris and his ex-wife
– yeah.
They're divorced and they end up getting back together because they've gone through this thing together.
That's true, yeah.
And I don't love everything he's ever done, but I love that idea of that as a theme. That's really kind of endears him to me.
Yeah, and I like his technical stuff too. You know, like that loader and stuff. You know, he is an engineering type of a guy.
Oh, yeah.
I heard a long interview of him one time where he and a team funded by him made a submarine that could go really, really deep.
Oh, yeah.
It was like a one-man thing, and they had the idea. Yeah, and they had the idea that, you know, it should look like a missile that's vertical, so you can go down really, really fast because you can only stay down so long. And so they redesigned this thing, and he went down in it. Yeah,
that's pretty amazing. He's really, and that was one of the things about The Abyss that made it really interesting, because that has been an interest of his for so long. He's been so interested in deep sea exploration for so long. And that's just kind of his thing, is that he wants to know what's out there. He doesn't care if it's up in space or if it's, you know, way under the ocean, just anywhere that we don't really know anything about. That's where he wants to be.
That's neat.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he is a very technical guy, because a lot of the 3D stuff, that's the reason it was so good. Whatever we think of
Avatar as a movie, the reason the 3D is so good is because he's helped develop a lot of that technology. He spent a lot of time developing it.
Yeah, and he's going to make a handful more of those too, I think. Isn't he making three?
Oh, yeah.
I think it's four.
Oh.
Yeah, I think it is four.
It's a bunch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he'll be busy for a while.
Right? Although, where's the next one so far? It's been a while. I think they just...
But then they're going to come out, one a year, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think it's, 2017 or something that it's supposed to come out, the next one. But it is really... I mean, whether you like his movies or not, it is pretty amazing that he is so involved in actually developing all of the technology for this stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Finding the Titanic and exploring the Titanic. He was super involved in that. And all of this stuff that he's really interested.
Well, like Scott said, he's an engineer kind of guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. One thing that I thought while I was watching this one this time through, those scenes where you have all the Marines together, when they were eating and stuff? some directors can pull those off. And some directors can't, Chris Columbus and, Spielberg, in Close Encounters and stuff. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm alone in this, but I feel like when you have those, a whole bunch of people in the room together and they're all interacting with each other, it's can be really noisy and just kind of aggravating. But this one is not any of that. And some, like I said, some directors pull that off.
Yeah, definitely. And it can come off as partly because they're trying to set this scene and all these different characters are this is this guy and this is that guy. Oh, he's really funny. This is the tough guy. And it can come off as really, really fake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it can come off as everybody's seen movies where it's we get it. These guys are so punk, except you wrote the dialogue so stupid that everybody just sounds like an idiot.
No one can deliver it.
Yeah.
Well, in that sense, and I thought of this earlier, Scott, when you were talking about, how he so gets into the technical and the exploration. In that way, he's got that same quality that Joss Whedon has. He loves this stuff so much that he makes what he wants to see, I think. And that's what helps make it really natural and make it work, because he knows what wouldn't work.
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, and he managed to establish all those characters without making them seem cliche when they had only two or three lines apiece.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was unobtrusive.
Yeah.
It didn't seem like they were shoehorning their lines or their characters in.
Yeah, because even the pilot... You don't really see much from her, but just the way she does her job. And then when she's sitting there going, Spunkmeyer, come on, and you're just going, yeah, I know you. I know who you are.
Exactly.
I don't have to know you as well as Vasquez, and Frost, Vasquez's buddy. You don't have to know him really well, but you get that sense. Somehow, like you say, he pulls that off.
Yeah. And I thought Ridley Scott did a really good job of that too on the first one.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. You're right. Yeah.
The guys complaining about the two sidekicks complaining about their
focus. That's another, I guess it's obvious, but there's another connection between the two is those.
Yeah.
Yeah, dining room scenes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No. Yeah, because that as soon as they wake up, it's the same thing where we see the whole crew wake up and they're immediately who they're going to be through the whole movie.
Yeah, we mentioned cornbread earlier, but I didn't think of that as the whole scene of the groups,
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it establishes everyone. In fact, I remember reading about Alien, what's her name, Veronica Cartwright, I think is the actress, who she's terrified the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And she had said, and she had said she hated that and she fought being so afraid. And I thought, I was watching it going, I think that's kind of a normal reaction. You signed on to drag stuff from one end of the galaxy to the other. You weren't signed on for this. That's okay. And what they told her was, you're the audience.
Yeah, exactly.
Everything you feel is what the audience is feeling. And she went, oh. they like you because they understand you.
Yeah.
And I was like, yes, I do. I signed on for the long haul. I didn't sign on for the haunted house. So.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. So you mentioned Joss Whedon. Now he's connected to this franchise too, right? Didn't he write Resurrection? given the impossible task of writing the fourth movie?
Maybe he did. The only thing I really know, I've never seen the fourth movie.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I know about it is that it's directed by the French director of Amelie.
Which is so insane.
That's how we got make Amelie.
Right.
Oh, he did write it.
Oh, Joss.
Well, it's one of his early things. It was like...
Right.
Oh, I have seen this
it's
one.
It's like X-Men where they left in one... Or X-Men 2 or whatever, where he wrote a whole bunch of it and then they left in one line.
And
I was
Toy
able
Story.
To pick that line out instantly. But
Oh, really? So... No, it says written by. He's the only credit.
Yeah, the other two.
I was talking about X-Men 2.
Okay.
It was X-Men and Toy Story were the ones where he did a draft and they took almost everything he did out.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah. But that's how you learn and get. He was up for it.
Mm-hmm.
We can't all be Shane Black.
Oh, well, evidently this new movie. Is not supposed to be the best. Rose can tell us after she's seen it.
So. I heard good things.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I did too.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe I'm reading the wrong
thing. I'm going to see it anyway.
I know I was trying to figure out a way to get Kiss Kiss Bang Bang into this, but I'm like, I really just can't find enough redeeming qualities to.
Yeah.
Not a super moral movie.
No, we have to go watch that on our own. I had one more thing, but I don't know if anybody else has stuff that hasn't thematic.
Well, there's some discussion about whether the alien was engineered originally as this. I think maybe is a little outside of what the movies say, but there's some implication in the movies, which has given rise to speculation that the aliens were actually created as biological weapons.
Well,
that would explain they are.
Yeah,
in Prometheus.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which, Ridley Scott, who did the first movie. So, I guess that can give it a little bit of legitimacy if you feel that way.
He owns it.
He
thinks.
the plot of that movie is that... this is way before the aliens.
Oh,
stuff.
Yeah, it's like before recorded history, even, right?
Well, the cave drawing stuff.
No.
I was thinking cave drawings.
No, I meant most of what happens. Okay. So it's not even Weyland Yutani yet. It's just Weyland, the company. And so they're funded by the company. They found all these things, cave drawings of constellations that point out this star that you can't see with the naked eye, but it's there and they believe. They don't give a good reason for why they think that, like, humans' creators are on the planet.
Right.
I think they say something stupid like, it's just what I choose to believe.
There you go.
So good job. And
no deities. Forget it.
Exactly. So they get there and there is this installation. It's mostly empty, except there's this black liquid in like millions of canisters. And there's a recording of what happened last. And like people are running away from something. And it's these people, the elephantine helmeted aliens that you see that look like just larger, bluer people that are really ripped. And anyway, then like eventually if the black stuff gets on you, horrible things happen. You turn into some weird monster. There's like snakes and stuff in it. I guess it's really crazy. And then at the end, the alien is formed somehow. And the two survivors, go off to find the homeworld of the aliens to see why they made us, because it was determined, I guess, that they were going to Earth with all this stuff.
Got it.
And that they had created humans from their own DNA. And they were bringing this stuff to Earth. So the planet that they landed on was not LV-426. But I guess this same thing happened with all of the ships that they put this stuff on, which is that they couldn't control it, mm-hmm. and it ended up killing all of them instead. So it's ultimately, yes, I guess it was a biological weapon, according to Prometheus.
The danger of science.
Yes. But the reason it was such a poorly written or shot movie, one of those.
Yes.
It was very poorly written. That the ultimately the plot is so undiscernible, at least the plot as it was originally intended, is so undiscernible that you have to, you know, read a bunch of stuff online. Basically, Jesus was one of these aliens. They sent him to, you know, see if we were redeemable, and then we killed him so we weren't. And
oh, Ridley Scott.
Yeah.
Wait, he made Exodus with no God in it. Oh, it's all coming together for me.
Yeah.
Got it. Yeah. So Ridley.
I think I thought that some of this was implied in the third Alien movie, although it's been a while since I've seen it.
I don't think it was. Or maybe
it was someone's wild, you know, guess or something.
Maybe it was. Maybe it's just, you know, so far at the end of the movie that I just wasn't even paying attention anymore.
Yeah. Well, I think maybe in the fan community, regardless of Prometheus, there's always been that idea of, like, these things we've never seen where they're originally from. It's possible they were created by whoever first had them on the ship as biological weapons in some war we know nothing about as humans. They're kind of interesting because in the they are man shaped when they impregnate a man, because they take in some of our biology when they're gestating in a person.
Oh.
And so in the third movie, you actually see one that gestates in a cow, right. And it has four legs.
Okay.
Dog.
Whatever. And a four-legged animal. Yeah.
Well.
Yeah. Well, and that's what happens. That's why it always ends up in this alien form, even before people get there, because at least I'm just saying, according to Prometheus, because the ships that were carrying it had people on it very similar to us.
Mm-hmm. Right. We saw the skeleton in the first one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
I think the whole war that we know nothing about is more interesting, as well as my own better plot, which is that the reason that they made humans is the same reason that people test things on monkeys, because they're similar enough that...
That sounds like the kind of thing Ridley Scott would believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, and I feel like Ridley Scott did a bunch of backpedaling once Prometheus came out about, like, oh, I mean, it's only like a quasi-prequel. It really has nothing to do with aliens, so... I'm always kind of shaky on where his stance fell in the end on how Prometheus relates to Alien.
So I was just looking at this IMDb page for Prometheus. It said the budget was $130 million and it made $126.
Yeah, that is not surprising. Yeah.
You know, $130 million is like 5 Firefly movies.
Yeah, or like one Adam Sandler movie.
Well, I'm less sad about that. I'm not sure which is worse in that case, but
it's definitely the Adam Sandler one.
Well,
yeah,
so,
and for a movie to be considered financially viable, it has to make twice its budget.
I thought it was 3 times, but okay, yeah, twice, because the marketing.
I guess to break even, it has to make twice its budget.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it says here that Ridley Scott is making Alien: Covenant.
That's what we needed.
Yeah. And then in the related news, the headline is Alien Covenant set photos show an extraterrestrial massacre as Michael Fassbender promises great sets and aliens coming out of people.
That's nothing. Nobody ever disputed the sets or the aliens coming out of people. Michael Fassbender.
Even Michael Fassbender can't save that one.
Yeah.
Even Carl Urban. Well, he maybe could save it, but he would have to do a lot of his own work.
That's right.
he'd have to go off the reservation for that.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, this movie had Charlize Theron, and Idris Elba and Michael Fassbender. It was not good. It was horrible.
It was.
And it was honestly, terrible. It was kind of boring.
Yes, I was. We were laughing and throwing popcorn at it by the end, if I recall, when we watched it.
But you laughed and threw popcorn at Contact, so well, I can't trust you on anymore.
So there we go.
But I would definitely watch Contact before I watch Premiere.
I have to say, yes. I would definitely watch that. But
I could understand Contact.
I don't know. I kind of like to hate watch it. But
that's
different.
But, you know, the things you're saying about Prometheus, you know, this is this thematic idea again for this story is you know, there's one thing that it's a little wonderful mother-daughter-ish kind of moment when, you know, Newt's being put to bed and they're, you know, touching your nose or, you know, do this, look down and hit your nose. And but what Newt says is that, you know, my mommy told me there were no real monsters, but there are, aren't there?
Yeah.
And she says, well, yeah. And she goes, well, why do they tell kids that? And she's like, because most of the time there aren't. But, of course, the other real monster is wonderfully pointed out with that best line of, you know, I don't know which species is worse, Burke. You don't see them screwing each other over for a percentage of the profit. So there's the human monster, too. What are they willing to do in order to... How far are you willing to throw the other guy under the bus in order to make yourself better? And that kind of comes back around to that idea of what's going to redeem you. Mm-hmm. Are you have to look outside of yourself. You have to think of someone else. And that's what makes anything worth it. And he just always thinks of himself.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, can an alien have morality? Bears don't have morality.
That's one of the questions in science fiction that they explore sometimes is when you have an alien race that's intelligent but that you can't communicate with in any way, and if your purposes cross, it could be bad. You know, there's just almost nothing you can do to prevent misunderstanding.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
Although, you know, we don't kill aliens like that. In this particular case, it's clear who's in the wrong.
Yeah. Indeed. Well, but at the same time, what they're doing, what they're,
yeah,
you what know,
they're supposed to be doing,
either
right.
designed or born to do.
Yeah. Right. They are who they are. But the thing is sometimes things are inimical, if that's the right word, to human life. I mean, it's the reason we kill mosquitoes so that everybody doesn't get malaria, or we try to, or Zika, whatever else. Trendy. I mean, there are things. Yeah, thank you. Thanks for keeping it current. In 5 years, we're going to go, oh, yeah. But it's that thing of sometimes you have to make the choice. We can't be like Burke always, although he's doing it for his own good. But his kind of person would go, well, they have their own value and this and this and this. Well, not if they're going to come and kill all of us, because we have value, too.
Hmm.
And we're allowed to say that we have value.
Well, yeah.
You know, we don't want to destroy things around us, but. Sometimes
I think it was easy for the android in the first movie to say these things have value and should be protected when they're not going to kill him.
Yeah, his head can be turned on by a wire being hooked up to it still, or an electric thing.
And
yeah.
He also obviously just despised people.
Yeah.
He looked down on people and thought humans were so stupid and worthless and just, yeah, he didn't like people. And that's part of it. You know, he was on board with everything the aliens were going to do, he didn't care.
Yeah. Where's
the guy? I have to say, I think describing that model as twitchy is a little bit of an understatement.
I agree.
I know, right?
After having just seen the first movie, I was like, wow, that's awfully polite of you.
I mean, maybe twitchy in that the murder was attempted and not successful.
Windows Vista is twitchy.
Yeah.
If I try to kill someone, I'm going to do it all the way.
Yeah.
Good.
But yeah, Burke played a similar role to the android in the first movie.
But you didn't expect it because they really set it up so perfectly. You like the actor. He's acting nice. He seems like he's everybody's friend.
Exactly.
He seems so reasonable.
Yeah. Well, also the idea that, you know, the company had this report on how awful the alien could be.
they lose contact with their colony. And then they send a group of Marines with a lieutenant who'd been on one mission.
This is my second combat drop.
Yeah.
38 Although, simulated.
Again, if you think about it, the company has never wanted the people that they send to be prepared to deal with it. They just want the alien back. So if they had a lieutenant that was prepared for this, they might have just killed them all instantly.
Well, now you say that, but I don't know that that was really the case in this case, because Burke seemed to be following his own agenda. He didn't have anyone on his side. He was going to impregnate them. He was going to kill everybody else. And when he's talking to Ripley, he's like, we could make out like bandits on this. It's going to be a sweet, sweet deal, because he was going to have to get them past quarantine or whatever, right. Past whatever they called it.
Yeah.
You know, the technical, we're not letting you in. It's dangerous to everyone. So, but this was, but he was a company man, but I didn't feel like he was doing it for the company. Though if it worked, I didn't feel like the company would kick him out.
Well, right. So that's what I think ultimately happened. Like, I think in some backdoor thing, he was like, hey, could you please send maybe this guy instead of someone who's really good? And because he was like, because, you know, what if this happened to be true? And the company's like, yeah, if that was true, that'd be pretty cool. So there you go. Yeah. I mean, I can see that happening.
Yeah, because he did take responsibility for sending them out there with no warning. And I do love his whole like, well, yeah, but like if they weren't there, I didn't want to make a big thing of it.
That's always his way.
Like, oh, yeah.
His Jewish Sneaky. Mother, like, what?
Yeah, because
heaven forfend, you make a big deal of an alien that wiped out an entire space crew.
That's just how a corporate guy covers his tracks. I think in this case, it wasn't the company. It's what the ultimate corporate guy will do and what they care about.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it doesn't even matter if he's doing it for the company, because the company is full of people like that.
Yep.
You know.
Mm-hmm. And he's representative of the attitudes.
Yep.
Yeah. I do not agree with, but in this case, this is the worst company ever.
Yeah.
I mean, even the space station where people live was terrible looking.
Yeah.
And the clothes, horrible. The women's clothing, no woman would ever choose that clothing. It was forced on them at gunpoint in that executive meeting where they were looking at things. I'm just saying.
Yeah. And that haircut.
Oh, the haircut.
Also, did that planet ever get a name?
No, just I don't know.
They were colonizing it.
Yeah.
But I don't think they ever gave it a name.
Maybe they want to wait and see what it looks like when it's done.
No, this is one of those futuristic things where they just call it by the number. We're futuristic. We don't have to have stupid weak things like names.
But it is that corporate thing of like, oh, well, it's the model number. It doesn't really matter what it's called, because the people who live there, they're just assets to the company.
Well, that's also the scientific way now, right? It used to be things got really wonderful names, and now they just number a lot of stuff, it seems like.
Yeah.
So stars and maybe not plants, but yeah.
Yep,
they ran out of the Greek mythological names.
Yeah.
My friend from college named a tree hopper after Selena.
Oh.
Nice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Good for him or her.
Him.
You told me.
What species have you discovered lately, Hannah?
A species of really rude sister who brings up her scientific shortcomings on a podcast.
Okay, everybody. Being the podcast mom at this point. So, did anyone have other things to talk about that they noticed? That
I'm thinking. Good movie.
I love it so much. Yep. It's got to be my top. I don't know if it's my top one, but it's at least in my top five.
Really? Wow.
Favorite movie since I think I was like 13.
God, that's my kidding. Goal.
How cool.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Love it. There's never a wrong time. There's never a time when you're sad about like anything that movie won't make you feel at least a little better.
It's going to kick some serious ass. Well, cool. And it also, especially watching it this time and paying really close attention to more of the construction and everything, I was just like, I come away in awe of how well James Cameron pulled that all off. All the things that were written in there, that everything got used, like I said, and it all built towards something really satisfying, something that we all understood deep inside,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We all have to.
I agree.
Yeah, we all have to fight those monsters. That's the other thing I was going to say about the monsters is usually they aren't there, but if you're Catholic, you know, there are monsters.
Yeah.
You know, there is evil. And it's not just in people all the time. And that's so you don't talk about it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But these are just things we know. So
Right.
Yeah, and I think it helps to have Burke in the movie because on so many levels, the aliens are just doing what aliens do.
Mm-hmm.
There's no willful decision they're making. But Burke is. That's what makes him such a great villain.
Mm-hmm.
Is that he's choosing to do it. And he's in an awful situation where all the Marines around him are being killed off left and right. And he still says, you know what? Let's take one back home.
He's an idiot. Well, and I also
It's that Jurassic Park thing.
Yeah.
Where you see them running off and you're like, but you know you're going to die, right?
There's monsters out there. Did you notice? Well, and that's the thing I have to say in terms of direction or acting or whatever, both things, I guess, is the way he dies. It was so perfect when he turns around and there's this monster. And instead of screaming, he just goes, oh, because that's how he was. He was just that kind of guy. He was, you know, it was characteristic of him. I mean,
it was perfect.
Yeah, it was just perfect. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think also another thing that ties both movies together is they did a good job of giving reasons why they couldn't use guns. Because in the first movie, the acid will eat through the ship.
Mm.
Right.
And then the second movie, you don't want the reactor to explode. I mean, obviously, that's only in a certain part of the space station.
Well, and then there's
But it definitely helps to heighten suspense.
Yeah, and then there's so many of them that it doesn't matter.
Right.
Well,
the
and
gun
that's,
scene where they're watching the numbers. You're not even seeing
I
anything.
I love that.
You're just seeing the numbers count down on the guns.
Exactly. Yeah, and you can't really see the aliens because of all the smoke from the guns, but there's green
Your
blood flying
squealing.
Everywhere. Yeah, trumpeting.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then the brilliant, I mean, this is how he just keeps it ratcheted up the whole time, but the brilliant thing of, and I can't remember his name, the android guy going, take a look out the window. See that blue flare? We have 4 hours. The planet goes nuclear, literally.
Exactly.
And it's like,
you're finally,
super.
You're finally
this is just what
used
we needed.
To them. Maybe they can make it 17 days. I don't know. Maybe they can. No.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. But once again, it's that also the thing of you can't just quit. You have to try and try and try and try and try. If you fail, it's only because you're trying and you just couldn't get it done.
Yeah.
And she's like, Ripley's going, well, we have to think of something. So we better start thinking.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's life. You just got to keep going, man.
Exactly, Hudson.
Yeah. And her giving orders, that's what gets Bill Paxton to calm down again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a Marine through and through. He just needs something to do.
Lock the perimeter.
Yeah.
Hey, stay icy. All right.
You bet.
I'm okay.
Yes. But thank you for picking this.
Oh, well, I'm glad you liked it.
I did. I love it.
And thanks for talking about it,
well,
girls.
Thanks for everybody coming. Yeah.
It was so fun.
Yes.
Yeah.
Movie. We need to do it again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With next
Prometheus, obviously.
Oh, that and Contact, a double feature.
Double feature, right.
You should be sick that day, Scott.
Oh, shoot.
Right here, Matthew McConaughey may take his shirt off. Not sure, but it could happen.
It's possible. It's always possible.
Well, speaking of monsters.
Ah, monsters. Our next podcast.
Mm-hmm. In 2 weeks.
Yes. Burke is in one of these circles, I'm guessing.
He's down at the bottom, baby. The traitors.
That's right. Inferno, Dante's Inferno. We're going to talk about that next time.
Yeah.
So read up.
I do want to say I was on Goodreads and I said, because I was panicking about getting it done because I had several big things to read lately. And I suddenly went, Dante was so thoughtful. 33 cantos per part. So if you had started a couple weeks ago, you could just read a canto a day. They're fairly short. The notes, there's never that many notes. And I mentioned it on Goodreads, and one of our guys who likes to read along, he didn't get there in time to do one a day, but he's doing one a day, and then alternate days he does two.
Oh, cool.
So if you just read two cantos a day, you can be done by the time we talk about
That's right. That's right.
Justin only.
Good luck with that, everyone.
You bet. All right. Well, thank you again.
Yeah. All right. My pleasure.
You bet.
Thank you for having us.
Yep.
Yeah.
Cool. And we'll see everybody in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Talk to you soon.
Hey, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Hello, all. Scott here. That's our show. I hope you enjoyed it. But there's more. I had such a good time talking to all three of these folks that I included some of the recording before and after the podcast, with their permission, of course. I hope you enjoy it.
Anna.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, we hear each other. Yay.
Tom was going to run an errand. I was like, no, you can't leave until you're sure Skype works okay.
Tell Tom he's the best.
No, bad dog. Sorry. Hannah came in and they all went, no, it's all coming here again. She's a rock star.
Hold on. Let me get rid of the dogs.
All right.
Okay, come on. All right, it works, Tom. Hey, Kaylee.
Yeah,
I know. I'm
sorry.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Hannah.
Rose?
Mom, is that you?
It's like a dream come true. Newt? Is that you? I'm going to be there in a minute, baby. Hold on.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be disgusting.
I need to give you guys a few minutes first and then.
Yeah, I'll join you.
It's been hours since I've talked to you last.
Yesterday.
Oh, I love it.
Okay.
Cool.
So do I sound okay? Because I'm pretty close, but we're huddling around like, you know, two Dickens characters around Tiny Tim's fire or something. And my chair is much lower than usual, but probably doesn't matter.
No, I hear you fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Rose, say 1, 2, 3.
1, 2, 3.
All right, cool. I think we're in business.
Sweet.
Yes. Cool. Very cool. So we all agree that Burke is the real hero of the movie, right?
I like his business acumen.
Yeah, I think he's definitely standing up for corporate America everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Which, let's be honest, is just trampled on nonstop in
That's
most
right.
movies.
It's horrible. Yeah. It's horrible.
Certainly, and Ridley Scott and James Cameron have no place for corporate America.
Real shame.
But it was that or Muslims, so what are you going to do? Or Nazis, so.
Oh, man.
Although, in this one, the military is a real hero.
Yeah.
Not so in The Abyss.
Remembered. Do we want to even bring up The Abyss?
Yeah, I actually don't remember anything from that movie. I know I've seen it.
I remember that Ed Harris was so young that I was trying to think of Ed Harris's name so that I could say that he looked like Ed Harris. I've never seen him that young before.
Oh, man.
Do you remember The Abyss, Scott?
Of course I remember The Abyss.
Oh, okay. I just remember some weird alien face coming up out of the water to talk to everyone. Is that right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, the military was like the government in that one. We've got to hang on to this thing because of blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, exactly.
And then it went off the edge. I mean, they were just totally, not rational.
I think I got bored like halfway through and stopped paying attention. Mm-hmm. It was a very slow movie.
It was.
Yeah, it was. Although the real villain in the military in The Abyss was Michael Biehn or however you say it.
That's right.
Oh,
from this movie, yeah.
And he'd been in The Hero in The Terminator, of course,
exactly.
Right before he did
aliens.
Exactly.
Wow. Just,
and then he got like, well, spoilers anyway.
What?
He got like pressure sickness.
Yeah.
From, you know, in the abyss and like going down so deep. And then he kind of went nuts and
I don't,
he was convinced we had to nuke the aliens. And
yeah.
Oh,
he was the
ash. He got the trembling hands.
Oh,
well, that's Avatar, I guess. The military gets a bad rap in Avatar, too.
Which I never saw, but.
You never saw Avatar?
I held out. No, I did not. I felt like.
Well, you need to see it because it's beautiful.
I don't care.
It is.
You don't care that it's beautiful?
I saw Dances with Wolves and Dances with Samurai. I don't need to see Dances with Aliens.
Mom has a knee-jerk reaction to anything that might be pro-pretty nature.
To be fair, Avatar is an awful movie.
You should see the look she's giving me. Yeah, thank you, Rose. Rose is the one who gave me permission not to watch
Rose
it.
Rose has a knee-jerk reaction to hugely popular movies that she thinks are not good.
Yeah.
It wasn't
justifiably terrible. Think it's not good.
Okay, I'm sorry, but I've seen a lot of terrible movies.
Yeah. Without the special effects, no one would think that movie was good.
I agree with that statement.
Well, I'm just going to say, Hannah has no knee-jerk reactions to TV. She's the real rational one here.
We call
Ash in our spare time.
Well, like I would,
your programming's a little off, but
disagree. A little twitchy. I would say that my counterpart is Bishop. A wonderful rational being.
You would be trying to save one freaking alien because you can't nuke the whole species, not because of Burke's reason, but because it's a unique creature, unique to itself. It's not its fault that it's so hostile it wants to kill us.
For example, I don't feel bad for mosquitoes.
Oh, well, all right then.
Because they do nothing but bite me.
Fine. Okay, we have to get this out of our system because then we have to start being normal.
Oh, this is all gold.
You've been recording from the beginning, right?
We need to start over. Actually, I have been.
What?
Doesn't
it'll make
mean
the
I'll
director's
it.
Cut. Yeah, exactly. Put it on the end. Lord. Save us.
You know, it's been a long time since I've seen Alien 3 or Alien Resurrection. And I don't recall
Alien
much
3.
Of either.
We watched Alien 3. Mark and I watched
Did
Alien
you?
3. It's got Tywin Lannister in it.
Don't care.
Yeah, I've seen Alien 3 because
I know you.
I learned about it in a film. Well, they used it as an example in a film class I took.
As a positive example of?
it was an example of a film that went through pre-production hell. So we had to read three different versions of the script. There were like 20 versions of the script.
Oh, wow.
We had to read three different ones. Each one was a very unique take on the story.
Because it never should have gone past two. They needed to go home and be a family together. Done.
Well, the first one actually takes place entirely in a space station.
Huh. Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, originally,
that would have been a lot better, I think. The prison thing was weird, and it never really went anywhere. Like, it never ended up being that important thematically, I guess. To me, anyway. I don't know. Rose, tell us about this.
Well, no, I mean, honestly, they could have kept the story basically the same as it was, as long as Newt had stayed. I mean, spoilers for anyone who hasn't seen it, but as long as Newt had stayed alive long enough to be impregnated with the Queen instead of Ridley. Because then the sacrifice at the end would have been so much more heartbreaking instead of Ridley being like, I'm so over all of this and I'm totally want to die. And then she dies at the end and you don't really care.
Yeah, she had nothing left to live for anyway. Everyone that she loved died in the first scene.
Right. But if she dies with Newt, who she can't save, then that's like would be heartbreaking.
Yeah, that would be. Oh,
no one would have gone to see it.
Well, they wouldn't have known.
Just FYI. Well,
yeah, they wouldn't have. Actually, it was supposed to take place on Earth.
Just like
because that was at the end of Aliens, they had a teaser that said,
sorry,
on Earth, everyone can hear you scream.
Oh,
wow,
okay,
because that
really
was the first
bank
one.
On that.
So, okay, so let me just ask sorry to get technical on this. So we all watched Alien, right?
Yes,
mm-hmm.
Even I made it through, considering my hatred of haunted house movies. As I've now pinned it down to. So do we want to talk about that at the very beginning of talking about aliens, Scott, or do you want to talk about that later?
Because thematically, both of these young ladies have pointed out really great tie-ins. What it did is it made me appreciate that James Cameron really loved the Alien movie.
Cool.
He'd asked early on to if they were going to do a sequel, could he direct it? And the studio's like, yeah. But and then he did Terminator, and they went, you know, we're thinking about a sequel. And he went, yes, please, yes, 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 yes. And there's so many things that I saw, and that, you know, it's not like it's unique, but I just went, wow.
Well, yeah, that's cool.
Right. So also, Mark and I, my husband and I, saw the both of them back to back at the Alamo Draft House here, and they showed it on April 26th because the planet is LV-426. And they showed the director's cut, though, obviously, of Aliens, and the scenes that they took out, I mean, that was probably the first time I've ever seen the director's cut.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
Alien or Aliens?
Aliens.
Oh.
And so the scenes that they took out, I mean, obviously James Cameron makes super long movies, so they had to cut it down a little bit, but they took out all of the atmospheric scenes and anything that was slow and, you know, not necessary to the plot. But it really reduced the ties that it had to the first one, because the first one was all thematic scenes, and there was a lot of slow panning, quiet spaceship shots and stuff like that.
But we could talk about this during the podcast, but exactly.
Be sure cool. Yeah, I think Alien will just come up. Let it come up whenever it comes up, I think.
Okay.
Don't you think?
Yeah.
I mean, like, plot-wise, you probably have to summarize it before Aliens anyway, since it's a direct sequel.
Sure.
Yeah, we're going to assume, I think we'll have to start off doing a quick summary and then just going, we assume everybody's seen this, and don't you think?
Yep, I agree.
Yeah, yep. And just go right into it.
And also Alien.
Yeah, well, no, I think, exactly.
And also the Community episode that referred to Alien.
No. That definitely comes. Yep.
My daughter, we were watching Aliens. She had never seen it, so she was watching it with me. And she says, oh, I know that she kills the alien at the end in that thing because it was in Community.
I forgot that.
Yeah.
Yep.
So did
like all the things I know from The Simpsons.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Had she seen Aliens itself before? Did she like it?
She loved it. Yeah. She thought it was
terrific.
She
liked one better than the other?
No, she liked two better than one.
Mm-hmm. Good taste.
I think it's a more complete film.
Yeah.
Well, it's just different.
They're different kinds of movies, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're right. They are linked. And I saw a lot of stuff too.
Yeah.
This time around, thanks to Rose. She said, pay attention.
Yeah.
Yeah. So cool. All right. Well, shall we begin?
All right.
Excuse me. All right. Then, what number are we?
So you and I'll do our thing, and then do you just want to introduce them and they can say hi or?
Well, you clearly need to be doing that.
Oh, okay.
All right.
All right.
You let it rip. You know them better than me. Slightly.
She's gonna be rejoined.
I think that
by.
You should read their entire resume.
Oh no. Hannah's
in
one of those hippies that our boys wish our boys had beat in Avatar. And
how dare you. How dare you.
I just rewatched 30 Rock. Okay.
I love it.
I am a veteran racist as well, so that doesn't even make sense, does it?
Okay, fine.
Maybe we don't include that part.
I'll just say my daughters.
I'll throw it in myself. It's fine.
We're going to love this episode.
This is going to be the best. Are we ready?
Finally, yes.
Okay,
maybe.
Here we go.
Okay.
Thank you. That's fun. Too. That's hilarious.
Oh, thank you. Mm-hmm. We didn't realize we were going to do the whole Alien universe, but
it's
hey,
so
that's what you do.
Yep.
I love it.
Yeah, yep. Not all of it works together, but
it's so weird too. Like, why would you hire Guy Pearce to just be in the worst old man makeup anyone's ever seen for like
that was hilarious. Because as soon as you see him in the makeup, you're like, oh, he's gonna get young again. And then he never does.
Why else would you have him in there?
Yeah.
And so seriously, like, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Whoever did that old man makeup is probably jealous of Highlander's makeup where they just like greater eyebrows. I mean, that's better than overkill like this. What do you think that's going to look like in 20 years?
Oh man.
Hold up.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Heavens.
I just looked up who Guy Pearce was. Now I know what you're talking about.
Oh, Memento.
Yep.
He's one of those guys for me who's like Sean Bean. He elevates anything he's in if you give him at all a chance. You know, he's just good.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
There were so many people like that in this movie that they just wasted.
Mm-hmm.
In Prometheus, yeah. I don't remember it.
I don't know how Ridley Scott keeps getting the funding for the movies he does.
Because in between, he does Matchstick Men, or he does, what's the last thing he did that was great that was out? Everybody loved it, including me, and I can't remember what it is.
The Martian, yeah.
Yeah, The Martian.
Oh, yeah, that one.
Before that, the last decent movie he did was American Gangster. And between those, it was flop after flop, super expensive flop.
Yeah,
how weird. Did you know he directed a movie called The Vatican? It's a TV movie in 2013 called The Vatican, and it's got a 7.1 out of 10 on IMDb.
Well, you can't count them. They're all haters and atheists.
Did he direct it or produce it?
It says he directed it.
It's really weird.
I have never heard of it.
Unbiased, writer is
Paul Attanasio. Explores the relationships and rivalries in addition to the mysteries and miracles behind the Catholic Church is the description.
What? Ridley Scott?
That's what it says.
That's weird.
TV movie. And there's no images or anything.
That's kind of scary.
Yeah. Let's see who's in the cast. Rebecca Ferguson, Anna Friel, Matthew Good, Kyle Chandler.
I know. Oh, Kyle Chandler, that was the coach on Friday Night Lights.
Yeah,
that's it. Yeah. He plays Cardinal Thomas Duffy.
Oh, that guy, yeah.
Bruno Ganz is the Pope.
I'd have to look up a lot of reviews.
Wow. Yeah.
Before I watched that.
That's a surprise. But I was looking up. It looks like he's not directing the Blade Runner sequel. He's producing it.
There doesn't even need to be a Blade Runner sequel.
I know. No, but
one was done.
It's happening. Yep.
Although he's already been doing sequels, as far as I can tell, because aren't there like three or four director's cuts of the thing, of the, you know, Blade Runner? So
I've never seen it. He does have some director's cuts.
Yeah. I think he's really got two or three different versions of that. And I've just watched the original. I'm fine with it. I don't care what they say. I know the happy ending seemed tacked on. I'm good with it. Moving on.
Yeah, I'll take it. I can look outside and be sad.
Yeah. I'll just take my little origami swan and move on. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
So, what movie are we going to watch for you next, Scott?
Oh, gosh. I do need to pick one, don't I?
Mm-hmm.
I forgot about that for some reason.
I guess we'll find out later.
Yes, I will get one picked. Stat.
You'll probably just want to wait for the next Prometheus to come
maybe
out.
Maybe so. I would like Avatars 1-4.
Yeah.
Reading Dante, of course, you want something that's really serious to change the mood.
That's right.
Oh, Hannah, did I tell you that I saw Jupiter Ascending?
Oh, no. What?
How was that?
Should I watch it?
It was awful. It was just spectacularly awful. I think you would think it was really funny.
I bet.
You just have to go into it with like the lowest expectations in the world, and then it's pretty funny.
Already had it. Good.
You know, they made Channing Tatum. Okay, the only reason you hire Channing Tatum to be in a movie is because he looks good, especially with his shirt off.
Yeah.
And in this movie, they not only uglified up his face with this hideous little beard and like pointy ears and stuff.
Oh, no, thank you.
But they also, because that's what makes him look like an alien, I guess. And then they also, like, he took his shirt off. There was an entire scene with him gratuitously shirtless, and it looked like he'd just been sitting around with his friends drinking beer all afternoon.
That's upsetting.
It was very upsetting.
Why even have him in the movie? Yeah.
And Eddie Redmayne is doing like the main villain. And he like just does like a Voldemort impression the entire time.
Oh, come on, dude. Just because you have sort of a Voldemort face, don't do that.
Well, he was directed to do it, you know.
Yeah.
Voldemort face.
But it was a mess. They fit so much plot into that movie.
I love Eddie Redmayne, but you have to admit.
I love him too, but yeah.
Between that and the Danish girl. Which I went, I know immediately why they took him. Yeah, he's kind of got, looks like a girly kind of guy.
So British.
Yeah. The same director of Les Mis.
Yeah.
Tom Hooper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Danish girl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... That's kind of like, I mean, that's the thing, right? So Channing Tatum, especially with that script, is not good enough to do the whole Dread thing where, right. Am I sad he never took that helmet off? Yeah, very.
Carl Urban, but, yeah.
and Sean Bean is in Jupiter Ascending 2, completely wasted. They kept doing these weird things where it'd be like a scene with all these bees and beehives all over this house. And then like thematically, bees never got brought up again.
Yeah, what? What does that
mean? But they were so conspicuous in this scene. And they talked about like, if bees don't sting this woman, she's somehow the chosen reborn person.
What?
I'm like, I have so many follow-up questions.
So dumb. I'm definitely watching that.
Yeah, I think you'd like it.
Sounds like your kind of movie, honey.
Yeah.
Terrible.
And it did look really good.
Yeah.
So. Hello, Pooch.
Oh, yeah.
I said hello, Pooch. Yeah.
Yeah. They're like, Hannah's in here. Oh, Hannah's here, and we were shut away from her. Oh, life is the worst. Oh, awful. Usually they do that for me, but I'm nothing right now. So...
Cool.
Well,
all right. Well, you all have very a much wonderful for evening. Letting, thank you.
Shut up, Kaylee. Thanks very much for letting us all do this.
Oh, of course. Yeah. My goodness. Thank you. That was fun.
Nice.
Yeah.
You think it'll be all right?
Of course it's going to be all right.
Okay.
Why would it not be all right?
Oh. You know, my insecurities come out right after. You know how that is.
It's good.
Okay.
Thumbs up.
Well, we can't wait to hear it, but we'll wait till Monday or whenever it's edited.
Maybe I'll send you the raw feed.
Oh, terrifying.
Before I've edited myself to sound like more like Carl Urban.
I was wishing we could find a little bit of that like super hardcore music that's when do when you know things are happening with an alien, and we could put that at the end or something
all right,
like that.
Sure. Yeah, we can do that.
Yeah. Okay. Give yourself Carl Urban voice.
All right.
You know, a la Dread.
Eventually, we're going to get him to pay attention to us.
Not from Star Trek.
Someone's going to go, why does this podcast have 300 mentions of Carl Urban shooting people, being better than the Pope? Mm-hmm. What, you know.